Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Evil Empire Sports Podcast on this September 16th, 2022. I'm your host, Rob Macarello. I'm not in the witness protection program. You could call off the search, the APB. I've been here the whole time, stricken again, not by COVID, but a cold almost as bad. Had no voice, coughing, grossness all over the place. And for those of you that have reached out and said, when is the next episode? Well, I'm happy to tell you, here it is. Once again, tough to do a sports podcast when you have no voice and you can't talk. But alas, here we are, back on our feet again, just like the Yankees, fresh off a sweep of the Boston Red Sox. What a medicine they've been for this up and down Yankee team this year. Boston, through and through, has been absolutely terrible, and being able to play them and their god-awful defense in Fenway Park apparently was just the recipe that the Yankees needed, because they came into the, well, really the entire second half with a lot of question marks. Injuries piling up, the inability to score runs, and absolutely uninspired baseball. A team that early in the season looked like they could beat anybody, and rather quickly in the latter stages of July and certainly after the trade deadline looked like a team that could and frankly would lose to anyone. One of the worst five teams in the American League by record, and a team that was not on the right foot with eyes and aspirations towards the postseason. So things start to get a little slim for them. The Rays came into town with a chance to trim that AL East lead to only one game. And thankfully, as we've talked about the American League East a few times this season, the Crucible helped to do its job. Toronto and Tampa Bay split and beat up on each other, and the Yankees' lead in the division is up to 6.5 games, and that's over Toronto, who just barely eked ahead of Tampa Bay, who's 7 games back as well. In that loss column, which is what everybody talks about because you can't make those games up, the Yankees are 7 ahead in the loss column against Toronto, which is right where you want to be. Still a team in the Yankees that's playing, so let's just say, better than 2 times more wins at home at Yankee Stadium, but just barely over that 500 mark on the road. So usually the Yankees are a team that could bring that offense anywhere, and with a solid bullpen, that translates well to playing from behind, with a lead, at home, on the road. So maybe that's just the buckaboo for this team. And I think that that's a really interesting stat to look at, 37-34 playing on the road this season. That may have something to do with bringing up some younger players. Bring up Oswaldo Cabrera, Oswald Peraza, Tim LoCastro even, those sorts of players. If the bright lights of Yankee Stadium are hot, well, what happens when you take that show on the road and you're playing with the scrutiny of the team that's been underperforming, a team that's not been able to score a lot of runs, a team that's been pressing, and you're doing it in a hostile environment, you're not used to the road, you're not used to playing on the road in the show, may make life a little easier traveling with the big ball club, but the pressure is no easier. There's a lot of people in the stands, whether they're Yankee fans or haters. It's a tough environment to be successful, and I think that the stats are bearing that out. But most importantly, in the final stretch here, in the middle of September, it's crazy to say that. Football has already begun, or if you're a Cowboy fan, it's already ended with Dak Prescott's thumb injury and their terrible offseason. You can start to have an eye towards the postseason, and the Yankees are certainly in a better spot now to make it. I believe that Tampa Bay, at 7 games back in the AL East, is still trailing Toronto for that wild card spot. Let's see. No, they actually may be in that final wild card spot here on the 16th of September. Baltimore, of all teams, as we do a little reset here, they have done what I want the Yankees to do. Tank, not pay your players, completely remodel the ballpark to make your pitchers happy? No, not what I'm talking about. But they've called up the young players, and they've let them hit. They've let them play. Gunnar Henderson, one of the newer guys that they called up playing infield for them, speed, power, average. He's got all the tools. It's interesting. Maybe because it's Baltimore and they don't get all the same attention, and maybe because they don't have as highly touted as a farm system as the Yankees do, because the Yankees prospect and hype machine is always in top gear, ready to keep that churn of press out there, that Volpe and Peraza and, you know, Jason Dominguez now is starting to hit, and maybe he's starting to find his stroke. He was promoted to through the Yankees minor league systems. Maybe Baltimore doesn't have that same hype machine, but here's what they did. They didn't talk, nothing in the press, weren't looking like they were going to be doing a whole lot of buying at the deadline and getting rid of those prospects to bring people in and make a surprise run at that wild card and a playoff push. They made a couple of moves, got rid of some bullpen depth, and the Orioles have had a decent bullpen this year. And they called the young guys up. And they're not just here like a Boy Scout trip to take a look in the clubhouse and sit in the dugout and maybe hold their player's favorite hand as they walk on the field. They're getting to play. It's not charity. It's not a feel-good story. And from a baseball perspective, you're not letting those players languish on the bench where they're going to learn nothing really other than how to stand on the white line during the national anthem and where the sunflower seeds are. They're playing. They're getting big league experience, they're getting at-bats every night, and they're learning at the highest level. Their skills are being tested. And for the Orioles front office, they get to see, is this for real? Are we finally starting to see the arrival of players through our farm system, be it by trading, be it by drafting and developing, and what am I going to have potentially at the end of 2022 here as they make that run towards the wild card, or 2023 and beyond? That's what a good ball club does. In that respect, it's not all about the wins and losses, because the Orioles are not expected to do anything in 2022 as they approach and pass a 500 record and they surpass the Red Sox out of the cellar of the AL East. You wonder, is it just a feel-good story? A 500 club is still nothing to write home about. But for Baltimore, not losing 100 games feels like it's an accomplishment. And they have to see what they've got. You have to make that assessment of whether or not those young players are ready to perform on the big stage. And for a contender, whether it's the White Sox, the Astros, the Yankees, the Dodgers, even the Padres, with a lot of the moves that they made, Milwaukee, it's usually more about milking every last ounce of performance and output that you can get from the big names or the higher priced players on the roster, and making sure that they are fully comfortable and healthy and producing when it comes to the offseason. You're not benching those guys traditionally and calling up younger players and starting their service clocks and completely throwing out a character. The look and feel of that ball club, whether it's on the field or in the locker room, for an experiment. Hey, we got to see if these prospects could hit, because 2023 and 2024 are still going to happen, regardless of the outcome of 2022, and we've got to take full stock and inventory of those players now. The time to do that is usually not during a pennant run. So why is it even a point of discussion for the Yankees? Well, half the team's been hurt. DJ LeMahieu, down with the toe. Rizzo, down with the back, gets an epidural. Rare side effect that doesn't usually happen anymore in modern times, but he's getting headaches from it. So he's been out. Britton has been out for a while. Chapman just recently came back. He had been out for a while. Severino on the 60-day DL. We can go on and on about all the injuries that have hit the Yankees, and I'm not saying it as an excuse, but that's why you've had to play these players more out of necessity than a look toward the future, an assessment of the talent of the minor leaguers in the system. But while the Yankees had a few things going on, a very large lead in the division, a playoff spot seemingly all but guaranteed, an opportunity to get these players playing time during a meaningful season. And it wasn't like we had to call up players that were unheralded, never heard of, weren't ranked, weren't highly regarded. These are the same players that, whether it's Keith Law that writes about these things, the minor leaguers across baseball, or you know, Baseball Prospectus, and even Brian Cashman himself, and you've got to take what he says with a grain of salt because he always wants to keep the value of these assets high. These are guys that are supposed to produce. If you look at guys like Cabrera, who hasn't really hit much, but basically wherever you put him in the field has been exceptional. Literally a remarkable player on defense with defensive runs saved, vaulting himself into one of the top positions or rankings in the Yankees with respect to that stat. Throwing guys out from all over the outfield and contributing to this team, continuing to be a stalwart defensively, which when you can't score runs is perhaps more important than ever because you've got to suppress the other team's ability to do it. So I could live with him hovering around 200 while he tries to figure it out. Peraza or Volpe not being called up. Some of these questionable decisions where the Yankees have an opportunity to put these guys in. And look, the team has collapsed before Peraza came up. The team was collapsing before Cabrera came up. Volpe still isn't even here. Guys like Rortvelt and some of these other players, Austin Wells, and players that have not had an opportunity to come up this season, the major leaguers have done that for you. IKF, decent at the beginning, then maybe playing a little bit over his head, then going into a really deep, troubling stretch where he couldn't hit and he was making mistakes in the field and was the goat for this Yankee team, the poster child for their collapse. And recently getting that batting average back up to 270. Oh, well, he doesn't slug. He doesn't need to slug. He has the most stolen bases for the Yankees since Brett Gardner and I believe Jacoby Ellsbury both stole over 20 bases in a season. So he's doing his job. And you're going to put him at ninth or eighth in the lineup? I'm okay with that. I still think he's playing a little bit out of position because he plays a great third base. It almost seems like for every boneheaded mistake he makes on the easy or routine plays, he makes more of a remarkable play on defense. So you have to live with the good and the bad because you're not going to get an all-star at every position if you're the Yankees. A little bit more on that topic later. IKF, Josh Donaldson, who between having a couple of things where it looked like maybe he had some nagging injuries, then he goes on the paternity list, hasn't hit a lick. Good defense. He hasn't hit. I don't want to pay my third baseman in the American League $25 million a year so he could play good defense. That's not what Josh Donaldson is here to do. You pay the corner infielder $25 million to hit more than 14 home runs, to hit higher than the two teens. You pay him to drive in runs. I think when I checked last, and I purposefully did it relative to Gio Urshela, who I liked defensively, although the metrics said he didn't play great defense, the eyeball test to me, it looked like he played very well. He's got 14 home runs, and so does Josh Donaldson. Josh Donaldson's got 51 runs driven in, and it was pretty damn close for Urshela. It was the same guy. And if the Yankees are saying, well, we had to package Urshela just to get Gary Sanchez the hell out of here and get him out of New York because he needed a fresh face, we couldn't keep rolling him out there behind the dish and putting him in the lineup to strike out 220 times because the Yankee fans were going to riot. Fair enough. Gio Urshela wasn't a linchpin of the Yankees or any championship team for that matter. But we had to take on a salary dump to do it? That to me is going to continue to be a prime example of Cashman getting outclassed, where he usually doesn't, to be fair to him. But Josh Donaldson, not the answer. IKF during his slump. Rizzo, when he was in the lineup, hurting and not producing, then he goes down. Marwin Gonzalez has to start getting more at-bats. And for all the people that say that hit tool is his best tool, he hasn't delivered it with the Yankees. DJ LeMahieu, not injured enough to put on the IL, but you have to keep rolling him out there every day to hit ground balls to second base? Asinine. Aaron Hicks has given us nothing this season. So many of these dead spots in the lineup where now they all have decided that Aaron Judge doesn't need to be pitched to. You put him at leadoff and you walk him. His intentional walk rate is skyrocketing because there's no protection. And Gleyber Torres, as streaky as they come, has finally started to hit a little bit better. But still, the Yankees have had all of these players hurt or not performing. So now, the opportunity that you don't usually have in a year where you're over, 30 games over 500, or you've got a double-digit lead in the division. That's slimmed a little bit, but it's still rather comfortable here midway through September. You have the opportunity to play these guys. Let's go back to that example. 2021, the team was underperforming. They were a middling club, and a lot of the big names or the proverbial starters were hurt, and they brought up young guys, and they start to put the ball in play, run the bases, and play good defense. And it injected life into the team, and the team started to win. And when the prior starters either, for whatever reason, coming off the IL or the magic or infatuation with the younger players ended, guys like Greg Allen went to the bench. And what did the Yankees do? Played completely uninspiring ball, back to that 500 middling club, and an early exit in the playoffs. It makes no sense. There is a loyalty to whether it's you've got to prove yourself right, that you made the right transaction if you're Brian Cashman, or the number on the contract is higher than the other player, so you've got to play. It just pisses me off to no end because it feels like the priority is not winning. That's why I like sports. That's why I like any sports, because the bullshit and the opinion gets put aside when they roll out the ball to the rubber and say play ball, because you've got to perform. If you gave me $300 million or a team full of guys that look just like me, millions of dollars, we are going to lose every game. We're not ball players. I'm not a pro. The money that you're paying doesn't justify anything. In fact, when it comes to some players, Albert Pujols as he chases 700 home runs, or Aaron Judge coming up on free agency, or Gerrit Cole who came off a really, really strong, borderline dominant set of years with the Houston Astros before he came over to the Yankees, you sometimes have to overpay just to put those players in your lineup. You don't walk to home plate and the umpire checks your contract. Oh, $30 million a year? You start with a 2-1 count. Or your home run counts for more runs because you get paid. There is no such concept. If you hit, you run 90 feet to first base, just like anybody else who's ever played for 200 years until they change the size of the bases and the distance gets shorter by a couple inches. But we'll worry about that in 2023 with the upcoming rule changes. So the Yankees have an opportunity here to send a message. Mediocrity will not be tolerated. That's one strong message. Do I think that Josh Donaldson deserves those key at-bats? Do I think that IKF or Gleyber Torres, or especially DJ LeMahieu, if his toe bothers him that bad that he can't stop playing him? If you're injured and you're not well, or we go back to that story with Frankie Montas, you've got stuff going on the home front with your family, that takes precedent. You've got to go home and take care of a grieving family. Do that. If you are injured, there's broken bone, there is muscle that is injured, and you cannot perform physically to the level that you need to, get well. There is no criticism due for that. But if you are injured or you're hurting to the point where you cannot perform, a manager or general manager or front office or whoever's making the decision, I don't need to put on the tinfoil hat, QAnon, and say that Aaron Boone is on the puppet strings of Brian Cashman. It doesn't even matter. It's irrelevant. Someone said, whoever it is, DJ LeMahieu's got to go in and bat leadoff. He can't hit. He cannot do it. So do I fault him for not wanting to let down his teammates and not wanting to let down the fans? No. If injury is at stake, you know, I fault guys like Donaldson or Glaber or Hicks because they can't do it because they just don't have the talent level there. So as much as it's an asinine decision by the coaching staff to put Glaber Torres at cleanup for 3 weeks or put Aaron Hicks to the top of the lineup, or after he's been benched because he's overrunning fly balls down the foul line and moping because he didn't get to it while runners run wild around the bases, you have to take him out of a game, you should bury him. He should not make another appearance on the team. Because there's messages that you can send every single day with what Aaron Boone does with these players. That game, Hicks loses the fly ball and he's kind of, shucks, with the ball at his feet while everybody's running around crazy. And then another ball the outfield, he kind of gets turned around. That should have been caught as well. In between innings, you don't make a big show of it, but Boone benches Aaron Hicks for Esteban Florial. Great! It's not about punishment. You don't have to make Aaron Hicks feel bad. It's not about him. It's about the rest of the team. What message do you send to the team about those types of performances? We have an objective to win a championship. At least it's what they say. I think that that's a little bit of happy horse shit too. We're the New York Yankees and in the pinstripes every year we expect. So it's not about Aaron Hicks as much as it is about the team. You send a message to the team that that sort of effort, lack of concentration, negative thinking, downright bitching and moaning in the outfield is not going to be tolerated. Or maybe it doesn't have to be from the negative perspective, from the positive perspective. If you keep your head down and you play hard and you play the right way, and by association, you actually can hit the ball and catch the ball. Things that, the last time I read the rule book, are important to scoring runs and winning baseball games. Things that many of the players on this Yankees team for the last 2 months have been completely incapable of doing. If you can't do it, we're going to bring in the guy that can. I want Florial to get more at-bats because all anyone ever tells me is that he's capable of it. I don't see him do it. Well, he doesn't have enough at-bats. Give him more at-bats then. Peraza, give him the at-bats. Cabrera, give him the at-bats. Hell, Marwin Gonzalez, as we've seen, put him at first base, give him the at-bats. Because whether it's this year, if DJ LeMahieu is not healthy, if Giancarlo Stanton is not healthy, if Anthony Rizzo is not healthy, and so on and so on. Harrison Bader never gets healthy, although he's been rehabbing and hitting in the minor leagues. I'm not relying on him to come up and hit. Even when they interviewed Aaron Boone, he's saying, well, Harrison Bader, defensively, they don't talk about his bat. Defense, and really even pitching for the most part this season, has not been the problem. Scoring runs. This team has been no hit. Scoring runs. Brian Cashman's building of this team is like the amateur in the gym, skipping leg day. He's got the biggest biceps, and he's got chicken legs. We keep bringing in pitchers, relievers. Let's bring up six more relievers. Let's bring in a pitcher. Let's bring in somebody who's fast and can catch. We're going to score no runs. No runs. Look at the Braves. Look at the Mets even, although they've had some injuries. Look at the Dodgers. Those are playoff offenses. And the Blue Jays have been a little bit Jekyll and Hyde. And the White Sox have been very Jekyll and Hyde, although under interim manager Miguel Cairo, shout out to him, former Yankee utility man, all he does is win, no matter what. Those guys have bats. This is not the 2015 Kansas City Royals. This is not a team that has a $90 million or $80 million payroll that has to steal bases and play good defense and eke out runs. It's the New York Yankees. They've got to hit. And they put up 10 runs a couple of times, and they're playing the Rays, and they're playing the Red Sox, one fringy playoff team, one a last place team. So will the Yankees hit? I say this perpetually when we're talking about trying to say who's going to make the postseason roster. When I say who is going to be brought up from the minor leagues, who are the people that we can target in the offseason for next year? I always comment, where is he going to hit in the lineup? Because pitching isn't the problem. They're already having to move Domingo Germán back to the bullpen in anticipation of Luis Severino coming back into the rotation. Do I think that's the right move? 100%. Severino's caught a lot of shit. I think if he's healthy, he deserves to be in the rotation. I think at his best, he's better than Nestor Cortez. And Nestor Cortez has been fantastic this year, completely exceeding expectations. But that decision, if you've got to take out Germán, who's pitched with an under 4 ERA and eaten some good innings for you, even though he's not a big dominant strikeout guy this season, that's indicative of the fact that even with injuries and with more reinforcements coming, Chapman back, Britton not far away, Loaisiga finding his form, Wandy Peralta stepping up, and all he's doing is shutting his mouth and shutting people down, despite a couple of hiccups. These guys are not going to be Mariano Rivera and get every single player out, but they've been pretty damn close. You need bats. And if I could compare it to some of the other transactions that the Yankees have made, and going back to this notion of, are we playing the guys because we brought them in and we've got to prove ourselves right, even if it means a season of being continuously proven wrong? I'm pretty sure it was something like, for the same amount of money that you've got Donaldson and, you know, X number of other players, look across the rest of the team, whether it's even Rizzo, who it's tough to fault because he's hit over 30 home runs, but the average is toast, plays good defense. Donaldson, Rizzo, maybe DJ LeMahieu, and, you know, I don't know if it was Stanton, a couple other guys. You could have had Harper, Machado, Freeman, Correa. I mean, it was just this ridiculous list. And it wasn't like those were players that weren't available. It's easy to cherry pick. They had no desire to play for the Yankees. It wasn't realistic that they would ever get him. Maybe you could say that about Freddie Freeman because it comes out after the fact that he really wanted to stay with the Braves. Oh, woe is him. He ends up going to the Dodgers and he's playing for the best team in the National League. Harper wanted to be a Yankee since he was winning home run derbies in Tropicana Field as a 16-year-old living in Las Vegas. Manny Machado wanted to be a Yankee. His number 13 is modeled after A-Rod, who, by the way, has been training him in the offseason since he's a little kid. Carlos Correa, it was clear that he was just a mercenary going to the highest bidder. So these are guys that you could have had. And instead, we have to try to get by with this, well, we went for a whole bunch of second-tier guys because we wanted to be a little smarter. We wanted to save a little bit more money. That's horseshit. You're the Yankees. Don't give me this line about we want to win championships, but we don't want to do it with the best players. Why would you handicap yourself? I'm going to spot you 5 runs in the ALDS. Will you take them in the first inning? No, we don't need runs. We'll figure that shit out on our own. You take every advantage that you can get within the rule book at any point in time. And if that means signing all these players, if you've got the money, do it. Online, on Twitter, on, you know, The Athletic, on comments and responses to different articles. People saying to me time and time again, why would you worry about that if IKF is your stopgap shortstop? He's not expected to really block that position long term. Donaldson, you only have one more year. Then you have guys like Peraza and Volpe that are going to come. I'm in 2022. You want me to mortgage this season and play with a stopgap player? What does that mean for this year? The Yankees, the New York Yankees, should not have stopgap players. I said this in 2020 and 2021, albeit not in a podcast, but to anybody that would listen. The Yankees were doing openers. They didn't have enough starting pitchers to have a fully complementary rotation. That's like saying you're a pro team. We don't have a third baseman, who the Yankees didn't. Nor did they have a center fielder. And in the case of Gary Sanchez, nor did they have a catcher. They didn't have a left-handed bat. I mean, these are obvious things. It's like bowling with nine pins. You're incomplete. You are not prepared. It's worse than an F. And if I have to be so enamored with Peraza, who hasn't been given an opportunity to hit yet, so either the Yankees think that he can or they're trying to protect him, or again, this is just a tour of the locker room and he's going to sit on the bench and watch pros and learn through osmosis, that's bullshit. That doesn't happen. If you're not going to play him up here, send him back down to AAA. At least he'll win a AAA championship and he'll get to play every day and keep working on his craft and honing his skill in game situations. If he's not ready, if he's not the big league can't miss guy that everybody has been saying over and over again, and I'm so sick of it, then why couldn't you flip him to somebody who may want him for Soto? Or why couldn't you sign Correa? Or why couldn't you sign any of the other players who are ready now and can win championships now and are putting up big statistics now because you were worried about 2024 and 2025? Flip Volpe when the time comes and get the prospect that's a little bit further on down the road. Or flip him for more sure things in 2022 and then you worry about 2023, 24, 25. And I'm not saying you go back to this Steinbrenner rule of we sign everybody at top dollar, we never miss on a free agency, we give up the entire farm system, and then there's these desolate periods of performance because the Yankees have no depth. And you have to keep hoping that the right free agent comes on the market and their original team didn't lock them up. And you overpay for past performance and you've got the Vernon Wells and the Travis Hafners and the Lyle Overbays and the Kevin Youkilises. I mean, really ugly, disgusting teams. But there were a lot of good teams during those late 90s and 2000s just the same. And if I look at 2022 as do or die, and I keep coming back to this fact because Aaron Judge is not going to be here next year as things stand right now. I always put the odds on the field because I don't think the Yankees are going to pay Aaron Judge what he expects. I don't think they should pay him what he expects in like an 8, 9, 10-year deal at $40 million. Because Michael Kay will quote, if you're in at a reasonable price point, you are going to be third best. Two teams are going to be willing to overpay. So if you've got to capitalize on that in 2022, if you say to yourself so convincingly, Aaron Judge likely won't be here next year, so I've got to go for it now. And you do that with a stopgap shortstop? Huh? And you do that paying an MVP from 6 or 7 years ago $25 million a year because you pick up his salary from the Minnesota Twins, who used that gap in payroll to sign Carlos Correa, by the way, who I don't even like personally, but is a good ball player, one of the best. You're getting cute. If this is the wastelands of 2014, 15, and those seasons, where the team doesn't have all the pieces there, yeah, you don't push all your chips to the table then. You don't have the strongest hand. The other teams in the division are stronger than you. You don't have the full complement of players that you want. That's when you could bring the prospects along slowly. Or, like I said, in the case of the Baltimore Orioles, you bring them up and let them play. It's not going to cost you a whole lot else. But the Yankees try to thread the needle this season. And when you've got the Red Sox and you've got the Rays and you've got the weaker part of the schedule that you can feast on to pad and cushion your lead and get into the dance, all is well. But that's temporary. There's this notion only in recent years, maybe even going back further, I should be fair, because the wild card teams and the teams that have been forced to play on the road in the MLB playoffs have done fairly well. The Yankees themselves have benefited from that. But when you look at the rosters, when you look at the lineups, who is fearsome? Yeah, it's great to get into the dance and roll the dice and anything could happen. But wouldn't you rather go in as well-equipped and fully armed and capable of a battle station that you could be, were a fully operational Death Star, Brian Cashman. This is not a Death Star. This is a chicken walker. It's got some firepower, but it's got a lot of weaknesses. A bunch of Muppets running around on the forest moon of Endor can take this puppy down. So you've got to get lucky. It just doesn't feel right that the New York Yankees are a team that has to have all the things go right for them. Have to have a right fielder throw in the ball. The first baseman's going to try to cut off Gleyber rounding first base too far and throw the ball back in the outfield for Gleyber to get a little league home run. You can't rely on that. You could rely on that playing the Red Sox, one of the worst defensive teams I've seen in a couple of years, easily. In last place, not going to make the playoffs. Can you rely on that in the ALCS? Stuff doesn't happen. And if I have to use the Yankees' logic against them again here, they've said time and time again, in the playoffs, when you are playing teams that naturally have better players, they have a full complement lined up of their playoff starting rotation, usually a solid bullpen, you're not going to get 6-7 hits in an inning as the Yankees started off the game a couple of nights ago. You're going to have to hit one mistake pitch that you'll get in an inning, or maybe only a couple in a game. You're going to have to punish that pitch. You're going to have to slug Aaron Boone. In the playoffs, you got to get on base and you got to slug. Who's going to slug? Josh Donaldson can't hit home runs. Anthony Rizzo isn't playing. DJ LeMahieu can't hit home runs. Stanton can, but whether it's injuries or so much time off the field, and I don't like to harp on him because I'm generally a fan of his game, he hasn't been able to do it. There's been one guy who's been slugging consistently and in the lineup, and that's Aaron Judge. You're going to put it all on his shoulders with no help. I'm walking him every at-bat. I'm going to let Gleyber beat me. I'm going to throw four pitches out of the strike zone. He's going to swing at all of them. Miguel Andujar hasn't hit. Esteban Florial hasn't hit. Trevino, back to the mean. Clutch plays good defense. Again, I'm trying to talk about all the players in the lineup, and I don't want to harp on those guys because their role is not to be the mega run producers. But the mega run producers haven't done it. And like I said in the last episode, and several before that, if you've got to rely on the role guys to be the star of the show, you're not going to have a good production. That's the reason why sports has stars. That's the reason why movies and TV have stars. Because they've got the skill and they can deliver in crunch time. They can deliver in prime time. A role player or an extra is just that. They just don't have it. And they're needed. They are an integral part of a first-class production. But without the stars, you're not winning. Right now, the Yankees have one star. The Yankees are poised right now to make the postseason. They've got an opportunity to get right. Guys like Gleyber are starting to hit. I'd love to know if Peraza had anything in his bat, carry a little confidence into 2023, even in the long shot he makes the roster in 2022, but he's not getting the at-bats. So there will be a crunch, and it will be telling to me, and I'd be willing to bet the players in the locker room too, as they fill out the roster, whether they have to pick their guys for the playoffs or even the stretch run in the regular season here, who gets sent back down or who gets the at-bats. Because is it going to be those mediocre guys are going to slot right back in again? Or are we going to say, we've got to see what else we can get? And I'm not saying you guarantee Peraza a spot. If he keeps hitting 160, 170 and he's not ready, no harm, no foul. Go back down. But he hasn't been given that shot. You bring him up to give him the shot. You don't bring him up to, he's not decoration. And the Yankees have thankfully been able to get a little bit of confidence back, and they're doing it in division against rivals that help them twofold. The mental aspect of being able to beat the teams that have been a thorn in their side, and also distancing themselves, especially when it comes to the Rays, padding their lead in the division, that it's not going to be the largest collapse in American sports history regular season to miss the playoffs. They've got to carry that momentum forward and make some really tough decisions about what this roster is going to look like. Hopefully you've been following us on Twitter, because when you don't have a voice, that's where most of my commentary has been about the Yankees. The Yankees community on Twitter, over 5,000 users, people that are tweeting live about the game, sending links to their articles, sending links to their podcasts like I do for mine. It's a good spot to interact with fans in real time. You want to see lunatics whose fandom and opinion swings seemingly on every pitch and every run. You're going to get a lot of that too. But that's a great way to interact and hear some of the tidbits that I've got in real time, and even branching out onto some other topics. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well, on Evil Empire Sports. Thankfully, we're able to do a little bit of good. It's less about me and more about the organization, but we are able to be a sponsor for the Calandra Lodge, Sons and Daughters of Italy, a social club that has got across the country different chapters and lodges. But they were raising money for Ukrainian refugees. These are women and children mostly that are fleeing Ukraine and the war over there, and set up their sponsorship in Italy, actually. A little bit easier to get to than, say, the U.S., but as they're looking for a place to eat, a place to learn, just be safe, good day of golf for a good cause, and getting the Evil Empire Sports name out there, too, is just icing on the cake for a much more meaningful endeavor. At evilempiresports.com, you could find some merchandise, too. Wearing the shirt today as I broadcast. Some folks snapping pictures up of them in the sweatshirt and wearing the caps and stuff like that. That's great. Again, I'm not retiring on any of that. Just looking to get some cool logos out there and get some awareness out there for the podcast as well. A couple of people have been asking, what's going to happen after baseball season? Well, as a Yankee fan, I'm probably going to cry because I don't expect a World Series and I expect Aaron Judge is going to walk. But we're talking more for the podcasts and maybe even some written pieces themselves. I plan to continue doing the podcast. I watch a ton of football. I do a ton of fantasy football. I'm always going to think about ways to maybe give some tips on undervalued players. If you're doing things like DFS, I'm the current title holder for the Yonkers Fantasy Football League with my group of buddies too, so I'm going to look for every opportunity to brag about that. But I've been approached by a couple of people that have said, hey, you know, could I write about this, or maybe I could hop on the podcast and talk about that. In all fairness, I'm not a Giants or a Jets fan, so if we've attracted any fan base for New York sports, you know, it's one thing that I could do it if it were a job. I don't want this to feel like a chore. It's been hard enough with, you know, real life getting in the way and unfortunately being sick twice now. So I don't want to have to be forced to watch a Giants game, because my passion and my knowledge, not to say that I'm the best, but I think that that shines through a little bit better on a topic like the Yankees, where I've been watching it for 30 years and I know fair enough about it. I certainly believe enough in what I'm saying that that's going to come through and hopefully deliver a good product. I don't think I'm going to do that for the Jets or Giants. For the Giants in particular, I'll be watching it as an NFC East fan and a Cowboy fan. I'll be paying attention to what's going on, and I'm certainly going to be able to troll it. But as a fan, if you follow those teams, you know, my opinion may not be for you. So maybe we're going to get somebody involved or a couple people involved that want to talk about those teams. Likewise with basketball, you know, I'd like to say I jump on the Knicks hype train when the team delivers, but, you know, for 20-something years, they haven't delivered squat. I just think that this is a long-winded way of saying I want to continue to contribute to the Evil Empire and New York sports in particular. I'll always have a say on what's going on some of the bigger stories, the national level, the stuff that everybody's got an opinion on. I'll let you know what mine is for the 2 cents that that's worth. But could be some exciting things as we look to expand a little bit, get more content out there, and get people that are just as passionate, if not more passionate, if that's not scary enough, talking about some of those other teams. And as always, if you have opinions on things that you want to have discussed on the podcast, episodes that you'd like to hear, questions that you want to hear answered, or any other thing that you want to have make its way onto the air, email mailbag@evilempiresports.com, and that will always come right to us in a nice, neat, and tidy list for us to talk about in future episodes. So until then, we'll leave it right there for this week's episode. We'll be back. The Yankees continue to have big series. They are finishing up after a bye night last night to give some of their players some well-needed rest. Got to get your rest, says Aaron Boone. So early bedtimes, everybody. Drink your milk, say your prayers, and take your vitamins like Hulk Hogan and Aaron Boone will always tell you. And we'll see you for another episode on the Evil Empire Sports Podcast. Take care.